This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Danny Meringue.
I found two empty bottles of a particularly decent Chateau Noir Bordeaux 57 in your rubbish.
Dusty Hera.
You went through my garbage?
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app.
I find it particularly offensive that you use them to wash down an order from something called Macho Taco.
And Portland's sports leader, 1080.
I would never drink a Bordeaux with a Macho Taco.
The Fan.
It was a burrito machissimo.
I don't know if you're on Danny and Dusty. We're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AmTheFan or Twitch.tv/1080AmTheFan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah, it's never going to change.
On a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. The changes to college sports, which we have been talking about basically for 2+ years, they seem to be coming to a head. It's not exactly a coincidence, because as you have the finality of the court case ending up, hopefully April 7th is the final date for that. It doesn't get kicked down. The can doesn't get kicked any further. And with that, you are going to have the professionalization legally as it pertains to college sports.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all looks, because the Power Four conferences are the ones that hold all the power. And within the Power Four, the Big Ten and the SEC obviously are kings of that. But what's coming out now is you're seeing different sports kind of gearing up and arming themselves for individual structure that they perform in. There's three stories right now that all came out within the last 24 hours that truly could flip the landscape of college sports on its head. And all three of them are linked to something that has to happen in order for college sports to survive as we know them. And that is, they need antitrust exemption.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that doesn't happen and Congress has to get involved, it's going to be really damn hard for anything.
It's a lot of legal cases
to move forward.
There's going to basically, it makes everything challengeable.
Well, because if you don't have antitrust exemption, then you cannot put a cap on revenue sharing. You cannot put a cap on name, image, and likeness. You cannot put a cap on how many years an athlete can play in the NCAA. All of these things are currently being challenged by people time and time again. And right now, the three stories that are out there all are pretty interesting and totally different and unrelated to each other. The first one is that the world of college football is going to create an enforcement arm that is separate of the NCAA. And it is, they are going to keep everybody that is playing at the FBS level, that is opting into revenue sharing, they're going to keep them in check. And that is that's a big undertaking, by the way.
It is.
But it's also, when you hear what they are trying to do, if they get the buy-in, it's finally the guardrails that everybody's been hoping for in college sports. Because Brian Kelly opened up to Yahoo Sports, and whoa, Nelly, he threw some hand grenades in the living room and went, deuces!
Yep.
Because last week we talked about the Big Ten SEC meeting, the ADs met, and they kind of went about how this is all going to look and laid out a plan. Well, Brian Kelly, LSU head coach, he said this: there will be real enforcement. It will be across the board, consistent enforcement with severe sanctions. They'll be quick. They'll be swift. I think everybody's on board with it. Basically, they're starting an LLC that will be the enforcement arm of college sports, which will implement penalties for all things from revenue sharing to restricting the number of transfers a program can add on each year, the fines of going over a salary cap, a reduction in revenue sharing if you do go over the salary cap.
A second apron, if you will.
Well, basically what they're saying is that, so if you go $1 million over that $20.5 million revenue mm-hmm. share, your school can be fined up to $5 million, and you get $1 million taken away from your pool of money the mm-hmm. following year. Okay, if coaches are in violation of recruiting or consistently going over revenue sharing, they can be suspended mm-hmm. for seasons and fined millions of dollars. Okay, you are going to have the limit of number of transfers that your team can take in every single year. This is going to be one that's challenged a lot, because who are you to tell the kid he can't leave, yeah. right? That's already been struck down by the courts.
Yeah.
Unless you have antitrust protections, you can't tell them that.
No.
And so you're going to just have all these kids just out in the transfer portal, and there's limits on how many guys can be taken in. So then you're sitting there going, nah, there's nowhere for you to go. Kind of what we see right now, to be honest.
Yeah.
But to a greater magnitude, because they literally cannot bring them in at all.
Regardless of if you want to or not. And that's... even beyond this, like the implications that this is going to, there's the Dell'Oite is the company they're bringing in to do all the research and check all the NIL clearinghouses, basically take all of the contracts that exist for payments via NIL or NIL adjacent, and have a database of everything. And then basically you would submit your NIL agreement with player X, and they would grade it on a fair market value grade based on all the data that they have.
This ain't going to go well.
No, because isn't that the whole point? Is that, hey, some school somewhere else wants to value me more, and that's supposed to be kind of the free market, open market situation. Like, oh, it's not supposed to be pay for play. It's pay for play. It has been pay for play. It's been pay for play from the jump.
This would be something where coaches could be suspended, institutions get millions of dollars of fines. You can't offer up any of those things mm-hmm. to anybody else. That's not, they have to be in house before you offer any of these things. And the clearinghouse that they want to set up, good luck.
I don't think
trying to tell them like, yeah. nope, this isn't legitimate. You're out. But if the organizations all agree on it and they have antitrust protection,
I don't think
then at that point, you could put caps on, and basically what they want to get rid of is the $8 million for a quarterback mm-hmm. to come here, and we're just going to overpay you, and it's not for your name, image, and likeness. It's our pay for play, but it's not from our revenue share pool. And there does need to be a guardrail, and that's why all of this comes to, you got to make sure you have antitrust protections. Like, the Congress has got to get involved in this for any of these things to work.
Yeah. And even then, where do they go? When is enough enough? How are you to tell a company? Let's say those same things exist in the NFL and in the NBA, professional sports in general. Those caps continue to grow. Those rules continue to change. They evolve. You can't do that with college sports because of the constant turnover, because of the volatility. The market is very, very, very different. It's significantly less static than you have when you've got a 10-year league-wide TV deal where you can make projections and have an understanding and know where things are going. Where in college sports, there's way too many players. There's way too many teams, universities, programs, whatever you want to call them. There's you can't You can't put this everyone under the same blanket. You just can't.
That's why you need the antitrust protection, and you need some sort of umbrella that you're operating under, right? The endorsement thing in name, image, and likeness, that's completely different. And this is where
I don't think
the politicians are going to agree that you can limit how much money they make in a salary cap, and then how much money they can make on their endorsements and name, image, and likeness from a third party. That's where that goes out the door, because that would telling LeBron James, sorry, you can't build an empire.
Yeah.
Because nobody's done it before. That's not what the market has ever said. Cooper Flagg, how in the world can a clearinghouse say, well, I mean, nobody else has gotten $500,000 to hawk sandwiches at this place. Cooper Flagg.
Or his New Balance money.
Sure. Like any of these things. Yeah. Like who are they to say that we're going to restrict your earnings? That's going to be the tough putt. The other challenge, though, that is football related right now is Corey Colley, cornerback for NC State. He is challenging the NCAA in court too, and this is going to be related to this and what you said, because the turnover is so high. He is suing the NCAA for a fifth year of eligibility. And this is not like a Diego Pavia situation where he's like, I played 2 years at JUCO. How can you take away two more years from me because I played at an institution that isn't under your umbrella? What Corey Colley is contesting in court is that the NCAA has arbitrary rules that when they're taking into account eligibility that should not be in place for how many years a player should play. We've seen this before. You play, you know, four games and you can redshirt.
Mm-hmm.
You get injured. They're the judge, jury, and executioner on whether or not your career is over or not. He's just saying, you guys shouldn't have the power. So he's taking it to court.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking at is this court case could be the one for a fifth, sixth, seventh year of eligibility in the NCAA and saying, if I can't make it to the league, who are you to restrict me from my earning potential? I have earning potential here at the collegiate level. And as long as I'm pursuing degree or multiple degrees, then who are you to say that I can't earn money and play a sport? And there's a lot of legal people that believe he's going to win this thing.
Because there's no precedent and there's no guidance that says otherwise.
And it is arbitrary with the NCAA on when they allow another year. COVID, another year, go ahead. Injuries, Cam McCormick, who's from Bend, he played eight or 9 years in college football because he kept getting hurt. And they're like, yeah, we'll give you another one. But
somebody else's injury is enough. And remember the North Carolina transfer.
Yeah.
Like he sat out a year. He didn't play.
And they still said, sorry.
You transferred twice, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why?
This is where death of the NCAA, this break off, things like these won't happen. And if they, again, if they need those protections, if they get those protections, they could just run free. The third story in this is going to be massive for all the Olympic sports and non-revenue generating sports, because
is what we're going to get to next here.
Yeah.
The opt-in date alone for the settlement is 3 days if you're going to be one of those schools. To be in the revenue sharing.
Oh, okay.
That has ramifications for the non-basketball and football programs throughout the country. But you're also taking a look at seeing right now what's going on with, or potentially what could be going on with U.S. soccer and men's soccer, and the ramifications for what that could mean for the non-revenue generating sports. We'll get to that next here on Danny and Dusty, Danny the Fan.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Build a house on haunted hill. Every time you walk by, talk about the changes coming to the world of the non-football basketball sports in college. There's a very interesting discussion going on in the world of U.S. men's soccer, particularly at the collegiate level, but also the governing body. There's been a push for the last 4 or 5 years now, and really it goes back to 2000, but it's been much more significant since 2020, about moving to a year-round two-semester model. And I think the reason why this becomes interesting is this, while it sounds like it's very unique to soccer, I think this is something that the other non-revenue generating sports can look at as a particular model when it comes to either international or national governing bodies, as it were, and how you focus on getting finances into those sports and development platforms kind of going forward.
First of all, the two-semester model is U.S. soccer. The U.S. Soccer Federation is actually working with a handful of schools, 32 mm-hmm. college soccer programs, to play basically a year-round model of soccer. And the 32 programs are basically, it's a weird cluster. It's like Big Ten and ACC soccer, with then you have a couple of Big 12 schools, and then Oregon State mm-hmm. out west. You'd have four Oregon States or schools out west: Washington, Oregon State, Cal, Stanford, San Diego State. So five schools out west that would be playing soccer in this year-round federation. The two-semester thing is that you would have a fall season and a spring season. Mm-hmm. And so in that, you'd have year-round soccer building, as you said, building the awareness, building the brand of it, mm-hmm. making it a bigger deal. And
also matching the international calendar.
Breaking away from the NCAA mm-hmm. by saying you get one season and that's it. If you look at like the international calendar, soccer, like in the European Football League, it starts in October.
Yeah, it starts in October.
And it goes all the way through May.
And but you have two breaks built in. One, yep. you have around Christmas time,
mm-hmm.
and then the kind of the transfer windows that exist across all of the leagues in basically Europe and South America. And then you get another break later in the winter, pre-spring, in less than an Olympic year, like when you have, you know, a longer break. But in those break periods, they afford those players to go play for their international squads, or to go back to training, or go on vacation, whatever it is they do. They call them the international breaks, because it's typically when you're doing your Euro Cup lead up qualifiers, your mm-hmm. World Cup qualifiers, those kind of things. But you're not condensing soccer into 12 weeks. And this is not just solely motivated by revenue and just having in a 12-week window, but also the overall health and fitness of soccer players, and not trying to have them fly cross country and, you know, play match here, play match there, play and try to get as many games in a short window as possible. But it's more about spreading it out.
And like, this is something that they've been talking about doing this for like a quarter of a century. Mm-hmm. But again, as we said in the last segment, this is the time where they're saying, all right, there's a gap.
There's an opening.
And we can shoot this gap mm-hmm. right now with all of the turmoil in the NCAA, with the revenue sharing cap that's going to be put mm-hmm. in place. And you could see soccer and football right now breaking away out of the umbrella of the NCAA and saying, we're going to do it on our own. Mm-hmm. And right now, like, part of the conversations are, U.S. Soccer Federation may put it as many as seven figures, mm-hmm. eight figures.
Equity into college soccer.
Into the player pool for mm-hmm. revenue sharing amongst these 32 schools, and then start building from there, and then say, because they got a couple billionaires that are invested in mm-hmm. United States soccer, and saying, all right, how are we going to continue to grow this thing? And doing it in the two-semester calendar. They want to start growing the game in that way for collegiate soccer, because that, as you said, with the calendar that they play in the international game, mm-hmm. it's a deterrent for some of the athletes to come over to the States and play soccer over here.
Yeah.
One, because you can play professionally
and make
when
money.
You're 15 years yeah. old over there. And then two, it's janky. They see it as a janky, antiquated system mm-hmm. that we play American soccer over here. And so how do you grow it to match that? This could be the alleyway. And there's a lot of people that are saying the best avenue may be this soccer joins FIFA, which that would be wild.
And the interesting part about this
that's not corrupt at all.
Collegiate soccer would be an opportunity for, let's say you've got some American star. Let's say Christian Pulisic, you know, he goes to insert West Coast school here. Halfway through the season, the transfer portal opens up. The international break, and some Chelsea comes in and goes, we're very interested in him. We don't want to wait.
Yeah.
We will give your school a transfer fee. You will lose that player, but we will buy the rights to that player, and he will become a professional player for us.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we give you $3 million. Period. Done. And it's an interesting idea. It's an interesting model, but
that would be that a mid-season transfer.
Yeah.
Who? Because then you're really becoming professional. The professionalization of
but
sports.
That's. I mean, you're talking about. You see transfers for kids that are 14 years old.
Yeah.
It's not like we don't see this already. Like, soccer is very different as far as like the age runouts and like when guys can actually become very good players. Like, it's not totally uncommon to see a 17 or 18 year old
sure
phenom starting for the biggest clubs in the world.
Yeah.
But to me, it more than anything, what this signals is it not the
UCLA would be out west too. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, squirrel moment.
Well, but they're Big Ten.
Yep.
So they're in that umbrella. But the idea of this is intriguing to me, simply because it shows that they're not afraid to look at opportunities. And I think this is what all of like the non-revenue generating sports should be looking at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you need to, like, gymnastics. gymnastics should sync their calendar up with the international gymnastics calendar and likely become a part of the international governing body. Everybody operates under the same guidelines, the same rules, and you basically use it as a development pipeline that also gets you paid.
The interesting part from this is men's soccer in the United States big enough to keep the momentum going? The only way that this really works is if, like, U.S. soccer is subsidizing it.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that women's soccer may be more ready for this?
Yeah, particularly in the U.S.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
No other country is going to do this because they don't have college sports. But women's game may be, because of the popularity of the U.S. women's team, is actually far greater than men's team.
Mm-hmm.
What happens with the women's game if this super conferencing happens? Because, like, we look at it, Oregon State men's soccer, really good,
mm-hmm.
right? Are they going to keep, if they have a 32-team super league, are they going to keep, like, a University of Portland women's team out of it? You know, is this going to be like an opt-in where
international stars?
We've already seen in this model, and this could be the big split of football and basketball operate on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything else, you just kind of roll out your own league, your own entity. We could see it in baseball. We could see it in track. We could see it in soccer, to where it is the elites kind of continue to play amongst themselves and opt into these essential super leagues that you're seeing in soccer. It would, and you're going to be breaking away from your traditional conference that you're in order to do this. You are going to be breaking in those ties. They mean a whole heck of a lot, man. Those conference ties mean a ton. That may be the biggest hurdle that these schools that are thinking and talking about having a super league of soccer to kind of generate their own revenue and be self-sustaining. That could be what holds them back, because Ohio State and the Big Ten, that means a whole heck of a lot. And I find it interesting that the Big Ten is one of the conferences in full that is considering breaking away. And you didn't hear boo about any of the SEC schools being a part of this 32-team Super League. Because you're telling me that, you know, Texas or Georgia mm-hmm. or Florida don't have soccer teams that are that could be on good hard, enough to play with this? Yeah, they could. The SEC is staying out of this conversation right now.
It's again... The interesting thing to me is that they are exploring these opportunities and trying to link with these international governing bodies, because they are looking for guidance, of which the NCAA is not capable of providing.
You're going to find real quick, we've been talking about what is the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm.
When these things actually start to happen, mm-hmm. that's the end of the NCAA.
Yeah. And I think we are careening down this path. I would be shocked if soccer, number one, didn't pursue a model similar to this, if it's not the exact one. But if other sports like baseball didn't follow suit.
Mm-hmm.
The tennis has already got an association with the International Tennis Governing Body, and I could see that going even further. I think what the NCAA will ultimately end up existing for is rowing. Fencing, the Olympic sports that
I think it is Division III sports.
Yeah,
Division III, Division II sports. That's what it'll.
Where the governing bodies just aren't.
But this will be, it'll be devastating to Division III and Division II schools. It devastating. If you are Western Oregon or Linfield or Lewis and Clark Willamette, any of those small schools mm-hmm. right here in our own area, they get a big chunk from the men's NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And that means a lot to those smaller schools. It will be devastating when they all break away.
They're going to have to get very creative.
It's going to change.
And how they go about it and what matters.
And we talk about, we care about the Division I schools mm-hmm. a lot because they're the high profile ones.
There's a lot
most
more
of the people
ones.
That you know, mm-hmm. most of the people that you work with, they didn't play there. They played at D3, mm-hmm. D2 schools.
So it's
welcome to the NAIA.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to kind of see where this all goes. Well, speaking of interesting to see where it all goes, folks over at ESPN are taking a look forward to the college football season already. And some folks over there, including Bill Connelly, is a little bit down on where the Ducks are going to be and maybe due for some regression based on their roster going into next season. We'll get into that and more. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update.
You ever had a Big Kahuna burger?
Bill Connelly over at ESPN has a pretty interesting article talking about the college football returning production across all 136. Yes, they're now up to 136 teams.
Yeesh.
In Division I college football. And what this basically does is who's coming back.
Yeah.
And when you look at the list, there's a couple of pretty intriguing ones at 1 and 2. Number one, Clemson, who is not a team with Dabo Swinney, who's been a guy who goes into the portal all that much. He is a guy that stays
He has
dipped his toe, as it were, in there.
Yep.
But one of the ones that you have been banging the drum on for the last month here, at the number two spot is Arizona State.
Yeah.
They're returning 79% of their overall production, 78% of their offense, 79% of their defense. That ranks fourth and second nationally.
I think Arizona State is returning, I believe, 18 starters from a year ago. Now, Cam Scatabu leaves.
It's a big one.
Yep.
But you bring back your best wide receiver. You bring back your quarterback.
Sam Levitt. Yes. They are going, and you continue to improve that roster in a Big 12 that is winnable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Arizona State, if I am buying a stock, I will buy Arizona State stock because
you might be able to buy actual stock.
Not only do I buy what they're going to be putting on the field, they didn't lose a single coach in this coaching cycle. Not a single assistant coach left. That is huge when you're bringing back so many guys and you have the same coaches getting their hooks in them and continuing to build and grow. So Arizona State, that is not a surprise to see them that high on this. Not one bit.
No. One thing that maybe will come as a surprise is where the national champion Ohio State Buckeyes fall in here. And the teams that are kind of around them in that range. Remember, 136 teams in Division I right now. Ohio State is 101st. Texas is 103rd. Georgia is 105th. And the Oregon Ducks at 109th.
Well, and you also have Ole Miss in there, too, is like 113th. I mean, those are in Miami, I think, is 75th in this. So this is just returning production. But if you take a look at the schools that Bill Connelly is saying are most likely to regress this year, those are the schools, right? You're going to see a lot of college football playoff teams in there. And here is the thing with when you have these rankings and you're losing things and you're just identifying returning production, is that's what recruiting means, right? Because remember, last year, there were the same thoughts about, look, Oregon is going to have to replace Bucky Irving, Bo Nix, Troy Franklin. Those three pretty big guys that they had to replace last year, right? They found a way to do it. This is where, but they also had returning Jordan James, an entire offensive line, Tez Johnson, Terrence Ferguson. The reason why Oregon is so low on this is because of the fact that you lose Dylan Gabriel, four of your top five leading receivers, two leading rushers. Like, there's a lot of offensive production. And then on the defensive side,
offensive linemen.
Derek Harmon, Jamari Caldwell, Jeffrey Bossa, you're losing Jordan Birch. You're basically replacing the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot
that
they are trying to replace. Well, they're still working on the Kobe Savage, but Tysheem Johnson and Brandon Johnson, you're going to be losing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it.
What's interesting about this is, and Bill Connelly is very, very much analytically driven. I believe he's the creator of their SP Plus at ESPN, if I remember right, their projection model, of which he has altered drastically over the past 4 years because of COVID eligibility, because of the viability and volatility of the transfer portal. I found this pretty interesting. In 2021, the national returning production averages across the country were 76.7%. The biggest part of that was COVID. COVID added a year of eligibility, and you throw the red shirt on top of that, you saw significantly less turnover because of that extra year of eligibility. That dropped drastically from 76.7 in 21 to 62.9 the next year.
Dang.
Since then, it has gone down to 60.2 and 59.9. From 62.9 to 59.9, that's a pretty stable drop. This year is going from 59.9 to 53.7. Why? COVID eligibility has run out.
Well, and the transfer portal is ramping up. It's the two things that are kind of coinciding together is that all the extra COVID kids, they're all cycling out, and transfer portal numbers continue to rise.
They've gone from 10.7 transfers in 2023 per roster. It's up to 14.1. That's a 40% growth. That's not nothing.
Look, that's a big number.
Yeah.
That is a huge number. And look, there's another cycle that's going to happen again. Transfer portal will open up after spring ball finishes up. And all of this movement around in the returning production as it pertains to college football, the transfer portal works two ways, right? Because guys will leave, but you also bring talent in. And there's a lot that is missing from a lot of the contenders. And this is what we were talking about a couple of weeks ago with the kind of the world of college. How much of an outlier Ohio State was last year in that the guys that they had...
Everyone came back.
Come back. Mm-hmm. And the guys that they brought in through the transfer portal, it loaded up, man. And this year, it's going to... If you're talking about a big regression, all of those teams that were listed...
Mm-hmm.
They also didn't lose a lot of games.
No.
Oregon went 13-1. Yes. The regression would be 12-2. I mean, keep things into perspective here of what this is.
And the way that Connolly is highlighting this, he says the teams that are most likely to regress, Ohio State, Ole Miss, Oregon, Georgia, Texas, Miami, SMU, South Carolina.
And that does, but this is the thing. Recruit well. All of those schools recruit at a ridiculously high level. Some of the highest level recruiters in the country. Also look at the retention rates of their rosters. Not a lot of guys are leaving out of the transfer portal from those rosters. Ole Miss, kind of the outlier because they just, you know, Lane Kiffin dubs himself the portal king.
Mm-hmm.
They bring a lot of guys in, but all of those schools, they fill holes through their elite recruiting, mm-hmm. being top five, top 10 recruiters via the transfer portal. And every single year, those teams, since the portal has been around, all of them have gone in to supplement their roster with those portal guys. And Oregon is replacing Dylan Gabriel's production. They're not dipping in the portal yet for a quarterback. They're going to let spring ball play out because mm-hmm. they think that they've got three guys that can compete there, mm-hmm. four guys that can compete there at the quarterback position. They're going to let that play out. They could dip into the portal, you know, come the spring transfer window as well.
They're,
but right now,
anything can shake out over the next month and a half, whatever.
Yep.
Wasn't that portal open up?
And after, I think it's April.
Yeah, so it's like
May.
Third week, April, something like that.
But no, it's got to be after I think it's after the spring period, so I think it's May.
Okay.
But, I mean, look.
The interesting note here.
A lot of the holes have already been filled. He's looking at returning production. Mm-hmm. You fill those through the transfer portal of bringing guys in.
And lifting guys up. For me, the interesting thing here for Oregon, this is the one that stands out to me. Every defensive lineman and defensive back that saw more than 100 snaps for Oregon last year is gone.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's a pretty sizable change, and it's not something you can't overcome. That's where you develop the depth. That's where you talk about what Lanning's recruits are going to end up being.
Bring in the top safety in the portal.
Yes.
from Purdue.
100%. And that's where it's like, it's going to be interesting to see kind of like what the models of this stuff looks like going forward when you like when you're talking about impacts of transfers.
What? Yeah, like Mekhi Hughes, the nation's leading returning rusher in college football. He transferred to Oregon from Tulane. You know, the Paragon, the USC offensive lineman, Isaiah World, the lineman from Nevada. There's both those guys
of the world
transfer in. The Texas State monster, whatever that they brought in. They've been busy trying to fill those holes. And look, a lot of it is, you know, what do you got coming back next year? You know, there's a lot of guys that they ended up redshirting last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blake Purchase as an edge rusher, played as a freshman, redshirted last year as a sophomore. You know, those guys are going to be pivotal for their growth moving forward.
All right, coming up as we put a nice little bow on today's show, Luka Doncic is going to play his former team for the first time since being traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. Are you going to tune in and care, even if the game's in L.A.? Danny Dusty, Danny the Fan. Luka Doncic of the Los Angeles Lakers, guy that still feels gross to say, take on his former team, the Dallas Mavericks, in Los Angeles tonight. It's the marquee game of the night. Everybody I've talked to so far this morning, it's when talking about this game in the NBA, is like, do you think Luka scores 40 or 50?
11-y.
I think he saves that for
in Dallas.
In Dallas. I'm going to tune in. I'm going to watch because he's going to sneer and he's going to go at their necks.
I think it happens in this one. He's gonna get wound up when he returns to Dallas, and all bets are off. Then, like, you could see him chuck up 50 shots, but I don't know if we're gonna see 50 points out of Luka.
I will say,
who's gonna guard him?
Pushing Luka into the corner. What ends up happening? I don't care what kind of shape he's in. I don't care what his mentality is. I don't care what anything else. That dude is that dude.
Yeah.
There's a reason why he's a 30-10-10 guy in the playoffs for his career. He's one of the best playoff performers we've ever seen in the game.
Did you see that report today that was, what was it? After what Jaylen Brown did to Luka Doncic in the finals is what made the Mavericks think that Luka wasn't going to be the guy.
Luka in the finals went like 28-9-8.
I think he had 29. I think he averaged 29 points.
29. It was 29-8-9 or 29-9-8. The only thing he didn't do was shoot well from three.
It makes it look even worse.
I mean, whoever is running the PR team for the Dallas Mavericks should be taken out back and Goodfellow. They have made a wrong turn every single way.
It's not good.
It is the level of bumbling and stumbling that they have done in this has just been insane. I'm 100% watching this game.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the return to Dallas, but look, it's what we got. What's the other games that are on tonight? We got Duke Miami tonight.
Yes.
College basketball. Mm-hmm. Maybe if the Blazers were losing games, I'd be more interested in that.
There's some intriguing games.
I'll probably
Cavs,
watch.
Magic, Bucks, Rockets, Suns, Grizzlies. Like, there's some intriguing games in the NBA, but
yeah, I mean,
Mavs, Lakers, and it's the late night TNT game. It's gonna
I'll be there.
There's gonna be some juice, baby.
Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah. I'm gonna watch it.
100%.
I'm definitely gonna watch it. It's way higher on the list, and I think Duke Miami's really early. I think it's a really early
game.
I'd
probably rather watch that than the early TNT game. Well, Cavs, Magic is early TNT game. I'll two screen that.
All right. Damn.
But I am very much like, I think they go to Dallas next week. I think it's when it is. Next week, 10 days, something like that.
No, I thought it was in April.
Was it? I thought it was sooner than that.
I don't know.
Maybe I was looking at a different matchup.
If that game is in 10 days, buckle up, baby, because we're in for a dandy.
I mean, there's just not much of the season left. That's why I was like, I'm almost certain it was coming up pretty soon. You're right. It's not until April.
Yeah. I had my eyes on that one because I was like, call me when he gets back to Dallas.
I thought it was going to be, they have a Texas road trip, and I just assumed it would be in there. Yeah. They have San Antonio twice in Houston. That's what it was.
Boo.
Yeah. Oops. That's my
All
bad.
Right. That does it for us today. Up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with us. Good souk. Have a great Tuesday, everybody.
Bye.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.